nel gioco.
Lloyd, hello, how are you?
Hello, hello.
So we are a triplicate today, which is really good fun. The third in our group is Lloyd Coutts, who is an old journalist currently working as a researcher for a research organization, has been in a gazillion bands, and is a muso of note. Also a fantastic singer. So Lloyd, really welcome to our little gig here.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. I just should point out that I'm actually not a researcher. I run the publications department at the NGO, and the researchers are much cleverer than I am.
And Fred, you're back in the groove. How are things?
Things are groovy. We had 4 days of sunshine. Otherwise, I'm fine. I'm working on several book proposals, one about the Dutch band Golden Earring. And I want to do a book about their album Moontent.
Great. So now, in the interest of transparency and honesty and all of that sort of stuff, I have to make one public announcement. And that public announcement is that the three of us were all in a band once. So we know each other pretty well. And this band was, you know, it was just absolutely fantastic. And we were going to go out there and conquer the world, and we didn't.
The door was open.
The door was open, wide open.
Buggered off to Cape Town, so
that's
left Lloyd.
That was notwithstanding the fact that we had gotten our hands on the most fantastic name for the band. Remember, it was Andrew Donaldson's name. What was it? The Ever Expanding Waistband, or was that another band?
No, that was us. We were the Bipolar Ponies.
Yes, and we did actually bring out an album, and we'll talk a little bit more about that a bit later. In the meantime, we are talking about Lloyd's choice, which was songs that are perfect for a sad breakup. Lloyd, why did you choose that? What makes a great sad breakup song?
What makes a breakup?
I really enjoy rom-coms. And I think that, you know, I grew up in a household addicted to songs based on codependency. You know, she left me, my heart's broken, the whole world's coming to an end. Those sort of Shirley Bassey, Tom Jones, Engelbert Humperdinck, and, you know, real snort and trana stuff. I have that sort of affinity for those kinds of songs. But also, I can wallow in self-pity like nobody else can. And I mean, when you've broken up with somebody, that's the perfect opportunity to go as deep as you possibly can into, like, just wallow in a trough of self-pity.
So the one thing I should mention about the band is that every time Lloyd had a breakup, he would come back with an absolutely fantastic breakup song. So while we were recording our album, the other band members actually got together. We decided we were going to talk to Lloyd's then partner, who irritatingly was staying in a relationship with Lloyd. And we asked her if she wouldn't mind just breaking up with him temporarily so that he could write another breakup song. But anyway, he had plenty of others. It didn't ever happen. But as you say, I mean, I think a great wallowing in your breakup song, it has to be sad, obviously, but in some ways it has to be, I think it has to kind of lift you a bit. You know what I mean? You have to be so sad that you are actually on the way up rather than the way down. You know, what do you think?
When you get to the part that hurts you the most, and if somebody interrupts you, for instance, you have to go back to it so that you can really feel that moment, you know. I hate it when people
play it again.
All right, let's go. This is Fred's first song.
Just another boy
All right, Fred, that's the Cowboy Junkies. Where are we tonight? Tell us about it.
Well, it's a song. I mean, I love the Cowboy Junkies. Even if it wouldn't be a breakup song, it would sound like a breakup song. The way they play and the way she sings it is like, it touches your heart. She's sort of like almost on the level of Cat Power in terms of being able to convey true sadness. And this is from their third album, I think, Caution Horses. And it was an album that wasn't so loved by the critics, but I love it. And, you know, this is a song from a female's perspective, which I think is quite interesting for us guys. I loved one of the verses. But as I catch us in the barroom mirror with his arm around my shoulder, this girl I see has grown so unfamiliar, and she stands to leave with a stranger by her side. She can't help but laugh at a life turned so peculiar. And then she goes into the chorus, and where are you tonight? I don't think I can face tomorrow's light, not knowing if you'll be there to guide me. Where are you tonight? It's quite a, you know, it's not an easy lyric, but I think it's about making mistakes and regretting the mistakes, but also regretting, because it was actually quite fun with this barroom boy. You know, he's a bit of a roughie, I think. And it taught her quite a bit during the relationship. Yeah, I think it's just a beautiful song. And it's a breakup song. And I love the idea, you know, after a breakup, you often wonder where your ex is now and whose arms she or he is lying. And I think this is one of those songs that you think, fuck, he or she is somewhere else with somebody else. And I can't stand it.
No, I also love the instrumentation on the track too. I mean, it is really fantastic. The slide guitar and what is that? Is it a squash box in the background? I think it is, yeah. But it's, you know, and her breathy voice, as you say, it's all a sort of great combination.
When I saw them live, they put a little table and a bar stool in front of the stage. And she sits on the bar stool, a glass of water and a rose in a little vase. And she just sings there, you know. She's such a natural voice. She's just an incredible singer, I think.
Yeah.
Did you like it, Lloyd?
Yes, absolutely lovely. As Tim was saying, I love the slide guitar. It is as country as it gets. Although I was thinking that the slide guitar doesn't come from country. I think it comes from Hawaiian music originally.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were lap guitars, weren't they? Were
the steel guitar, the lap steel.
The lap steel.
And I think the slide guitar is just an extension of that. I mean, you don't play it on your knees, but you play it on your shoulder.
But it's an interesting thing. I was listening to Jeff Beck yesterday, accompanying somebody, and I realized that must be the thing everybody fell in love with about the electric guitar, is because it really can be made to sound like a human voice, and particularly a human voice in pain. So the slide guitar, I think, is that is a kind of a...
Yes. It does it very well. Yeah,
it does it very well. Yeah.
Cry.
Yeah,
cries. Well, that's the expression. He made his guitar cry. I mean, so
you are.
While my guitar gently weeps.
Exactly.
All right, next song. Lloyd, would tell us about why you chose this?
Well, I don't know how they pulled off the instrumentation there, but it just leaves you with a sense of desolation in your heart, you know, when it's all gone. And you're sitting there with a bottle of whiskey in your empty house that's now far too big for you, and you're just getting drunk. And yeah, you know, okay, it's all over now. But again, I got sidetracked now while I was listening to that kick drum. It is such an unusual behind the beat rhythm. I think that actually does lift the song and really add something. It's like almost a stumble in the background there.
Yeah, no, it's great.
It sounds like a funeral, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Slowly.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of very gentle rhythm, not.
Yeah, that New Orleans marching band rhythm.
That's exactly.
Yeah. I only noticed it now.
And it's such a contrast to her voice, you know, because you've got that thump at the bass and you've got this completely angelic voice floating on top of this rather thick, you know, mix. It was just miraculous. I mean, this is, of course, a Prince song. I always thought that that Sinead O'Connor and Prince must have known each other, but they didn't when the song was played. And I mean, I absolutely love Sinead O'Connor, partly because she's such a contradiction. She's such a mess of different contradictions, one of which was that she was singing really old singer-style songs. This was great vocals in a period when punk was emerging, and she was a punk in so many ways, except in her own personal singing style. It was just so remarkable.
A very strong voice, huh?
And then, of course, when she got booed at that crowd, I think it was in New York, and Kris Kristofferson went up to her and just told her, you just got to stand up to these people. And she was in tears. Yeah. That was another incident that really stands out for me.
After she tore the picture of the Pope, right?
After the Pope picture incident.
By the way, can we just mention who was right in that debate some time afterwards?
Yeah, exactly.
Who came out the winner in that little?
Yes. Well, I also liked the video. Remember the video? I'm sure you do. Where you see that tear rolling down her cheek.
Yeah.
Yes.
She sings this song. She really cried. Yeah. And she did have an encounter with Prince, which wasn't a very happy one from what I learned. I once listened to an interview with her, and she told the interviewer about how Prince actually assaulted her, and she had to run away in the middle of the night or something from his, what's his mansion called? The Purple Palace or something?
Yeah, she was locked in.
She was locked in.
He was extremely weird.
So she was bipolar, right? And I think off her meds most of the time. But, you know, there's a terrible price to be paid for the upside of bipolar, which is like this amazing stuff that can come out. Incredible. But the depression, and then, of course, her son went and killed himself. And that sent her right over the edge.
Yeah.
But anyway, great song.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. This is my first choice. All right, so that's Love Will Tear Us Apart by Joy Division, of course. I just can't get enough of the song. It's just so fabulous. And the background of the song is so great, too, because it was by far their most popular song. But it only came out after Ian Curtis, the writer of the song and the lead band member, died. Yeah, he committed suicide after struggling with epilepsy. And he was just a kid. I mean, he was so young when it happened. The whole background, the song itself, the context in which it was written, honestly, it just tears me apart. I also love the lyric. There's a sort of internal contradiction in the lyric about a love will tear us apart. And I also love the way that it's phrased. You know, it goes, love will tear us apart again. I just thought that was a fantastic you know, yeah. addition to the,
But anyway. Now, can I say something about this? I love the song.
Yeah, sure.
It's very autobiographical, but you earlier said, or was it Lloyd, one of you, that it also has to sort of uplift you a bit, drag you out of that deep, dark hole. And I don't think this song does that at all.
Well, I must point out that Tim said that. I mean, I'd like to wallow properly in. if I'm going to get down to misery, I'm going to put my face in it.
But Fred, don't you think the beat is the sort of part of the implicit?
No, it does have a sort of tragic thing in the background. I mean, it's more up-tempo than you would think for a song like that. Other Joy Division songs are much slower and more depressing. But it's got something really, I don't know, negative is not the word. Depressing is also not the word. I can't think of the word, but it's got something that doesn't make you uplift. I think it's those strings or whatever synthesizer they use that's slightly out of tune or something and sort of drags slightly behind the rest of the music. And that makes it, you think, no, I can't get out of this pit.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I do think it's a very kind of melodic song. And there's a reason for its popularity. Just so many people connected with it. Can't be that bad. I don't know.
No. I don't think it's bad. It's just of a certain sensibility, I think. Yeah. No. There is a certain British lack of sentimentality even in their love songs and so on. I mean, the Smiths, all of that lot, and even the more modern ones like Arctic Monkeys, those sorts of bands, they sing about the same things. But there is a lack of sentimentality in their approach, which is very British, actually.
But which has two sides to it, because I think it's good and bad. You know what I mean? Sometimes I quite like sentimental little songs, and sometimes I like the fact that that they are sentimental. All right, we've each had one shot. Let's move on. I got a feeling that I've said it all before. I've said it before. I say I love her, do you wrong, but then I go and do the same again. I don't know why, don't know why, don't know why, don't know why, don't know why. We gotta learn to share these moments in our lives and never let it get us down. We gotta put up a fight. Moments to remember. Moments by the Kinks. It's from a very strange album called Percy, which was the soundtrack to a film. And it had a lot of instrumental songs on it, not written by the Kinks. But I think about four Kinks songs, and all of them are so good. And this is one of my favorite breakup songs. I like Days a lot as well, but Days is much more known. And actually, he refers to Days in the lyrics of this one, which is quite interesting. I like those sort of meta things. It's a bit after the breakup, I think, when you things have settled a bit in your mind and you realize all the good and the bad things and that you must cherish the good bits and also the bad bits and be able to talk about it and not let it get you down, as Ray sings. I also like the instrument. I mean, there's that strings background. It's a bit a bit too loud for me, but I do like the strings in it. I mean, we had 3 out of 4 songs had strings in them so far, if we count the Joy Division synthesizer as strings. I think strings work very well for breakup songs, don't you? But it's like Ray Davies, he written so many excellent breakup songs, but this is, I think, is my favorite. Yeah, I mean, Ray Davies is such a master. And a lot of the Kinks songs don't have a lot of ornamentation to them. They were, maybe it was a different era. I mean, I always wonder how they would be presented today, you know, if he was writing the songs today, how they would sound. But as you say, this is just a beauty. It's a great song. great song.
I mean, the little phrase from the first brief hello to the last goodbye. I mean, there's a whole story in that one little sentence, which is what an excellent songwriter does.
Yeah. Well, was that the first song we've heard now with real strings in it? Because I think the first couple of...
Yeah, this was an orchestra.
Yeah. That was lovely. I've never really known the Kinks, and I kept confusing them with Ian Drury and the Blockage, and I can't imagine why. There's no...
Well, I suppose there's a overlap in great lyrics.
And that very Englishness.
Very. All right. Lloyd's next one. By Eva Cassidy. It's of course originally written by Fleetwood Mac. Lloyd, just a great heart wrencher, the song, isn't it? And also a terrible backstory.
Yeah. They were, everybody was hooking up with everybody else in Fleetwood Mac. I mean, it was a real 70s kind of thing. But I think when Christine McVeigh wrote that song, and John McVeigh were going through a bit of a patch because she was having an affair with the band's lighting director, I believe.
Yes, the roadie or something.
So, yeah, he was a roadie. So that must have added insult to injury. But then they were, I think they were in LA, and she wrote this thing in half an hour at around midnight, dealing with this heartbreak. And she was scared she was going to forget it. So she stayed awake the whole night before she could play it to their producer. Just so she didn't get it out of her head. And that's, so I've tried to teach it to myself on piano, and it's in F. And it's a beautiful, beautiful progression. But lyrics, man, the one that gets me every time is, the songbirds are singing like they know the score. I mean, it sounds so simple, but my God, I would cut off my right arm to be able to come up with a lyric like that.
I was going to ask you, Lloyd, what for you makes a perfect breakup song?
I think it has to touch something very, very deep inside of us that has nothing to do with our mortality. I mean, with our corporeal bodies. I mean, it's a soul thing. It touches you in a place that makes you realize that you are more than just a human being. I think that's what it is, and unites us in that. Because you know when you hear a song like that, that everybody feels that. You just know.
Yeah, everybody goes through it. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So was this song written while she was having the affair? Was it written for John McVie, or was it written for the guy she had the affair with? Do we know?
No, it was written for, the speculation is that it was written for John.
Okay.
Because it must have been a bit of a bittersweet thing, because they were very close originally. Mm. But I think they got divorced that very same year.
Everybody in that band, they all split from each other, didn't they? I mean, Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks, the drummer split from his wife, and John McVie and Christine split as well, all during recording of that Rumours album.
Another great song came out of that, and another tearjerker, which is Landslide. Stevie Nicks wrote that when she was breaking up with Lindsey Buckingham. And then she ended up in the Mick Fleetwood's bed.
know.
Yeah, so she just had a thing with him as well. That's right.
Yeah, Joe. Yeah.
Yeah. To make men anyway, a bit more messy.
As long as the songs keep rolling. So what I was going to say about sensibilities earlier is that I am now comfortable with the fact that these kinds of songs and those kinds of bands, which were then considered middle of the road, I just identify with that music. You know? I think it's because of the universality of it.
Yeah, I've been listening to a bit. Country songs, and you can, I mean, I always dismiss them as being sort of naive and middle of the road and a bit too in your face. But when you listen to them, the lyrics often are so clever and they do appeal. I mean, they don't hide stuff. It's not like that you have, like Dylan, surreal lyrics or something. It's like the little stories about heartbreak. And yeah. I think at a certain age also you're more receptive to those things.
Mm. Yes, precisely.
I mean, this is it's interesting that you chose the Eva Cassidy version, and I was just wondering about, you know, the backstory. How much does the backstory play into the song? Because, I mean, it's just incredible that Eva Cassidy, you know, who really wasn't very well known, she died just a few months after recording the song. She had cancer. She was such an interesting person because she was extremely shy. She went to one concert in the Washington area. There wasn't a big turnout. And she said to the concert organizer, "Oh, fantastic. I'm so glad there's few people." I also wanted to make one other point, and that was about instrumentation. That is about acoustic guitar. Acoustic guitars have become really the instrument of our era in some ways. And they do go really well with sad breakup songs. They have that sort of closeness and intimacy.
Well, here we had another strings as well, huh?
Yes, and strings as well.
What I also find interesting is that Lloyd chose two cover versions, which is much harder, I guess, in a way, if you haven't written the song, to give it that personal touch.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are incidents where, for instance, where Dylan heard All Along the Watchtower by Hendrix, he just said, "It's not my song anymore." And yeah. I think in a way he's right. There's another... Tim once made me a mixtape of covers just of "Suicide Is Painless." I think the Manic Street Preachers had just brought that one out, and it's brilliant. And actually, I've thought since then, I would love to do a rap version of that song.
Yeah. It's cover versions, I find them just sort of fascinating because sometimes they really, as Lloyd says, they can completely take over the song. This song, not so much. I mean, I think you could listen to either Christy McVie's version or this version by Eva Cassidy, and they would both work. But I mean, there is an art in presentation, and she does it so well, which is great.
I've got a new hobby on YouTube now, is I go and watch cover versions, like 20 in a row, but like unheard of people, the same song though. And it is a whole brand new world out there. It's wonderful. You're rediscovering songs.
Mm. Yeah. Because everybody who does a cover version brings a little extra. Yeah. And they are expressing love for the song. You know, it is a kind of act of respect for the song. Yeah. All right. Let's move on. Most of the time, my head is on the straight most of the time. I'm strong enough not to hate. I don't build a illusion till it makes me sick. I ain't afraid of confusion. No matter how thick, I can smile in the face of mankind. Don't even remember what her lips felt like on mine most of the time. All right, that's my choice. That's Bob Dylan most of the time. I love the song because it's a bit like your first song. It's not immediate. It's a little bit later. You're thinking back and you're kind of sad about it. And it's incredible how sadness stays with you and how memories play into that. And
And it's being triggered all the time.
Yeah. And the song is, it takes somebody with the lyrical skill of Bob Dylan to really capture that and put it into a bottled presentation that is so just consummate. And though it was in the track, but I just love this, the lyric, "I don't build up illusion till it makes me sick. I'm afraid of confusion, no matter how thick. I can smile on the face of mankind. I don't even remember what her lips felt like on mine most of the time."
Most of the time. it's such a good title. Huh?
Yeah, that's the thing about Dylan's love songs, though, or his breakup songs. They're cynical. There's a hint of cynicism in them. In "Don't Think Twice, It's All Right," "Ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe, you know. When your rooster crows at the break of dawn, I'll be gone," that sort of thing. There's a hint of, okay, fuck you then.
Yeah, he's moving cold. On. There's a coldness about him. In some ways, that's why I like this song, is because he's acknowledging here that beyond his coldness, there's residual. Yeah. But I agree, his love songs can be quite harsh.
Yeah, they don't call him the freewheeling Bob Dylan for nothing. He ain't hanging around.
Doesn't show much vulnerability, does he?
No.
The other thing I like about the song is that, you know, it was off Oh Mercy, and he spent quite a lot of time in his autobiography talking about Oh Mercy, about the album. This was the most popular track off the album, and it wasn't a very well-loved album by the critics or by the popular public. But obviously the recording of it must have left a particular mark that he came back to it in so much detail in his autobiography.
Well, he had a sort of love-hate affair with Daniel Lanois, didn't he, the producer?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And in his autobiography, he actually says that he was so sorry that he couldn't give Daniel a kind of hit album. I think a lot of the tracks on the album, Lanois actually plays his very iconic slide guitar.
Well, I was hearing it now through the earphones, and it's so beautifully produced and arranged. You know, you hear all the instruments very clearly, and none is dominating the other ones. And then that voice comes just at the right level. It's perfect in terms of producing, I think. Yeah. Slight bit of echo. Mm.
Was it made in Memphis? Was this one of those, or at the farm in? Where was
I'm
it?
Not sure.
It was recorded in New Orleans.
In New Orleans, that's right. Okay. All right, this is Fred's third song.
What about the glass dandelion? What about the TV screen? What about the undeveloped cameras? Maybe we should bury these. What about the last of the good ones? What about the ceiling fans? What if we move back to New York? What
about the... All right, Fred, the National, Eucalyptus. Unusually a song that you can actually understand from the National.
I'm not a huge National fan. I always dismiss them a bit as dour Midwestern types with dressed in suits and singing. But this album, I think it's Frankenstein something, really caught me. I don't know why. And this song, I think it opens with this song, or it's one of the first songs anyway. And later I heard an interview with him that he went through severe depression. I think it was around the time of COVID, and many of us found it quite hard to deal with. And he was imagining the breakup with his wife and what would happen. And because I think their relationship must have been a bit on the edge. And it's so visceral, no? Like suddenly there's all these material things that sort of properly announce the end of a relationship. You didn't play that part, but there's also where he says, what about the Cowboy Junkies? There's the Cowboy Junkies records. Mm. What are we going to do with them? Are you keeping them or me? All that. And it becomes suddenly very ugly, and there's nothing beautiful or romantic about it anymore when it comes to dividing what you have. And I thought it was a very poignant song.
Oh, no, it's fantastic. Yeah. I'm completely different. I absolutely love the National. I think the National really are sort of one of the iconic groups of our age. One of the things I love about them is that they are very, very rhythm driven. The rhythm is very prominent in the song and it really pushes the song forward. And once again, it's quite interesting how that bass drum is really like underpinning the whole, providing a kind of sort of bottom layer for all of it. It's just funny. I love the poignance of the lyrics. It's almost like a kind of version of poetry. And I love that Midwestern dour style. Lloyd, you like it?
Yeah, I also noticed the kick drum again. And the reason, I always think that drummers need to contribute a little more to putting songs together. I'm sure they do in many bands, but they come up with really great ideas and it can completely change the flavor of a song. Like in this case, if that had a straight four on the floor, it would have been a terrible song. Yeah. But the other point that you guys made was the point about the mundane issues, the admin of a breakup. And yeah. I'm watching a series at the moment. It's absolutely fantastic where this guy is breaking up with his girlfriend. But what they are arguing about are his collection of DVDs. She keeps calling them DVDs, and he's saying they're not DVDs, they're Blu-rays. So what difference is it? Because they've got extra features on them. That's why they had this huge fight. She says, take your shit and go.
He's very clever in this lyric where he says, what about the undeveloped camera? Maybe we should bury these. You know, that's very poignant as well. And he says somewhere, what if I reinvent myself? Suddenly in between all these things that they're dividing. It's like that sort of messy mind where you think, but maybe we can still, if I become that other person again. Or anyway,
yes.
It's a very good lyric.
It's lovely. Yeah. All right. This is Lloyd's third choice.
Day is long, and the night is yours alone. When you're sure you've had enough of this life, hang on. Yourself go. Cause everybody cries, everybody hurts.
All right, iconic song, Everybody Hurts by R.E.M. It just kills me, this song. It's just fabulous in almost every respect. It's just... Lloyd, why did you like it?
Because it's just raw grief. That's what it is. But it refers back to where we came in this conversation. It has a redemptive quality. Yet at the same time, it is liberating in how it exposes you as like this, just a piece of sobbing mess. And then it says, don't worry, everybody's going through this. Everybody feels this at some point. Just hang on. It's as simple as that. So you can purge.
But this one is written from another person's perspective. Eh? He's addressing somebody else.
Yes.
Right?
Which is actually quite
which is providing interesting, solace.
Yes.
Yeah.
Speaking words of wisdom, he is.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it's fantastic. It's nice to think of it that way, or think of a sad breakup song from the point of view of the friend who's trying to help.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's one of the reasons why it's so special. Do you think the song's overplayed? Do you think that it's been diminished by just complete overuse?
I certainly don't listen to it anymore because I don't need it. I needed it at a certain stage in my life because it played the same role that a funeral does. We go to mourn because it gets it out of our system. And for that, I will be eternally grateful, but I'm not going to spend the rest of my life listening to it. I don't listen to The Doors anymore, for instance, because I was with a friend and I was talking about how one song of them, I've been down so goddamn long that it looks like up to me. So he said, why are you still listening to that stuff? So that's exactly the same with a song like that. It's out there doing its job.
Yeah, no, there's I just wanted to make two points. One is about, it's one technical thing about the timing. I think the song's so interesting because it's in 6-4 time. And I like the fact that they changed their timing system to fit in with the picking process. And the other thing I really like about the song is that duck, the, I don't know what the instrument is called, but it's that wooden bong thing.
Wooden block.
Yeah, but I think it adds something really special.
The wooden block, the rim of the snare drum.
The rim. Now, I wanted to ask Lloyd, if I don't do that, I think, put songs aside and never listen to them ever again.
I go through phases. So I listened to Van Morrison for 15 years straight. If your name wasn't Morrison in one form, or Jim Morrison or Van Morrison, I wasn't listening to you. So then I, yeah, oh yeah, or even Morrissey. But then I really went off Van Morrison for a long time, and it's only coming back now in very small doses. I mean, I suppose every band has their brown eyed girl, but yeah, some songs are just now totally unplayable.
No, I can see that. Yeah, okay.
So, last song of our little session today. This is Lloyd. This is going to come as a big surprise to you.
Give me one more week and I'll be pushing through. One more week and I'll make my peace with you. Thursday will look so good. I'll take a walk in the neighborhood.
All right, so that was the Bipolar Ponies with Lloyd, in fact, on lead vocals, of course. The song was written by Lloyd. It was one of his great breakup songs that we did put on our album. And I've always just loved the song. I thought I was so convinced the song was going to make us fantastically famous. It was so clever. It sort of goes through the week day by day, talking about the days post a breakup, and rather forlornly asserts that, after a week it'll be okay. But I love the progression of it. It was just lyrically put together so nicely. But I do think, I'm listening to it now, even though the production is just magnificent, I do think we really messed up, because this was a ballad and we pushed it. We pushed it too fast and too hard. And we turned it into a kind of, into almost a rock song. It was sort of verging on a rock song. Anyway, still that doesn't detract from the fact that it is the most brilliant breakup song ever, in my humble opinion.
Well, thank you, Tim. That's very high praise. I must say, I was listening to the drumming on that and it was extremely tight. Rickus outdid himself on that, on the kit there.
You play bass on it, don't you?
I also play bass on it. But if it wasn't for you guys, there wouldn't have been a Wednesday. We were in that tiny little place in 7th Avenue, I think, in Parker's.
Oh, yeah, that studio.
Yeah. And Tim said, no, this has to be a Wednesday. We can't not have a Wednesday. So I went outside and I couldn't think of a bloody line. And then Wednesday, what became of you? Is what I was thinking to myself. What happened to the Wednesday bit? But then I read, that'll do. Wednesday, what became of you? You came around with something I could misconstrue. Depending on your point of view, maybe I'm not over you. I still love it. Anyway.
I know, sometimes you just have to revel in your genius.
No, it just amazes me where these things come from. Some songs, like this one I'm working on now, is taking months and it's really hurting me. But some others, 10 minutes.
What I always loved about the song was that you vocalized it so well. The Just the delivery is fantastic. There's a nice progression in it. It gets crazy at one point. It settles down afterwards. The trajectory of the song is part of its pleasure. And
we were trying to do.
Yeah.
I bought this book, The Hollywood Formula, where, you know, that it tells you where to put in the peaks and troughs. I don't know if we got it 100%, but there is a bit of a formula for peaks and valleys in a song. Yeah. But the other thing that Ryan made me do on that album was do take after take of vocals in thirds, going from like thirds, like 15th down, all the way up. All the vocals are mine. There's no backing singers. That's what was the amazing thing that they pulled off.
And Fred, when we first started practicing the song, you were still part of the band at that point.
But I find it hard to listen to this because I remember it only from our when it was still a ballad. And it had more tension to it, I thought, than this version has. This is more sort of mainstream. That one was really, it sounded like indie rock, didn't it? Like, introspective. Oh, it was a brilliant song, and I don't know.
Let's redo it to maybe in 6/4.
Okay. Yeah,
maybe you should have a go.
With the woodblock. When we need it, definitely need the woodblock.
Okay.
And
all
strings.
Right. As long as we stay away from the cowbell, I'm happy.
All right, you guys, that was absolutely fantastic. The songs are just mind-bogglingly brilliant. So which one are we choosing as the perfect song for a sad breakup? Oh, silence.
Complete silence.
All right, say drop one of your songs. Drop one of the songs that of your selection.
I'll drop The National. I have to drop one. For me, they're equally good, but I don't like the band, The National, as much as I like The Kinks and The Cowboy Junkies, so that's why I'll drop The National.
Okay. I'll drop the Bob Dylan song because it's not really in the breakup period. It's like post-breakup, I would say, even though it's a fabulous song and I love it. Lloyd?
Yeah, I'll drop Everybody Hurts because of Fred's astute observation about it being more an advice song rather than a
third person song. Attached.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
All right, and Lloyd, your choice is Songbird because it's just the most powerful of the choices. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, and also because of that one lyric, the songbirds keep singing like they know the score.
All right, it's very interesting that you choose that, but unfortunately we're going to have to outvote you because we decided before that we were going to go with One More Week as the perfect song. So thank you very much for your contribution, but you've been vetoed.
That's very kind of you, Tim, and just don't forget to mention that it can be found on all the usual platforms.
And that we're going to do a re-recording of it.
And we'll put up the recording in the selection on top of the original.
That's very kind of you guys. Think. Thank you so much.
No, cool.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lloyd. It's been a thrill. All right. So, Fred, next week we're doing my choice, which is the perfect song for kissing.
Okay. But we don't have to kiss, do we?
No, it's just about about what is the perfect song about kissing, or what is the perfect song to encourage someone to do the kissing, or it's the perfect song to entice someone to do the kissing, which is very important.
It's going to be the Shoop song, right?
Anyway, I'm looking forward to that. And thanks very much for everyone for listening. If you've listened this far, we have such fun doing these podcasts. They are, as Lloyd says, they are on all of the socials. You can find a collection of the full versions of the songs on Spotify. And you can contact us on perfectsong4@gmail.com. And we're on Instagram and X as well, of course. All righty. And Facebook, thank you very much,
guys.
And we will catch up later.
Thanks for the band reunion.
See you soon. Oh. And love to all.
Peace and love. Give me one more week and I'll be pushing through.